At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
What's up, Matt Ritter? Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
This one feels special. I'm just going to say that out the gate. This one feels really special. Hopefully that's not viewed as a dig by our other guests. But
it feels special to me, you know, but now we're starting off, you know, at a very high bar here. We got to keep it up.
Matt Ritter is one of our guests who it's interesting because he's a friendship expert, but not a friend of ours yet. So far, all the guests we've had on, we know in some capacity. But Matt, you're our first, like, we just wanted to have you on, and here you are. So thank you for
raising up. What percentage of your guests are actually friends, though, right? You said you've known them.
Good question.
And have you actually managed to upgrade any of these podcast guests? Because I do feel I don't think I've ever talked about that on our own pod, that your podcast guests are a ripe source of friendship.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny. I feel like I don't even know if any of my friends qualify as friends. And as a friendship expert, I wonder, I'm wondering if you're just going to be like, dude, you do not have friends.
Oh, are we going to rank them? Are we here to slash and burn? Are we here to slash and burn right now?
I think there's multiple entry points into the friendship conversation. I will say for you, Ollie, you know, there's been a few guys who've come on who are like, Ollie, we need to go to dinner. You know, we got to hang out. I don't know if it's just going over your head, but Bearden was like, yeah, we got to grab dinner.
Yeah, but that's the thing is because it's never really happened. Like, I've just made content with people. I don't think I even have friends. I think I just have, like, content associates. I have no one. I have my family. And my son. I mean, Lord knows what he thinks of me. You know what I mean?
First of all, I hear that a lot. Well, let's separate. I hear a lot. I have no friends. I've got my son. I have yet to have heard I just have content associates. That's a new one. That's great, man. I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that for my non-friends. You are are we friends? No, we're content associates.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's
Neil?
Like, yeah.
I mean, Neil, first of all, Neil's right here. You just said you have no friends, and Neil is right here, and he's hurting inside.
Are we friends? Ollie, are we friends? I don't even know.
Honestly, you really are. You know, like, you might be my only friend.
Top content associate.
Yeah, Neil, top affiliate. Neil's more like, I have an attachment to him, kind of like the end of Citizen Kane. He's like Rosebud, but it's, you know, or maybe like Montgomery Burns, like the teddy bear. I don't know. Yes. You know, Neil's different. I don't know why. He is my security blanket, but I've only met him in real life once.
That's a good friend to have.
That's not true. Twice.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The first time was a real, that's when he insulted me. Wow. It was amazing.
Yeah, I was Ollie's exec when TV used to exist, Matt.
Oh, TV? I forgot. That's why we're doing this, because now we're content associates. We're not
We want to give you a proper tee up.
That's true.
You know, we have a huge team back there of unpaid interns that wrote an intro for you. Ollie, why don't you do it in the proper way? Come on.
Okay, it's a good one too. Honestly, when I read it, I'm impressed by it. Hopefully that's not considered a dig by our other guests. Folks, Matt Ritter is a lawyer who turned into a comedian, screenwriter, and host of Man of the Year, the number one podcast on friendship. It's been featured on the Today Show, NPR. Netflix is a joke fest. I'm literally very jealous of that one. He made friendship a daily habit and now helps thousands do the same. When he's not writing movies for Hollywood or wrangling his toddler crew, Matt's sharing simple ways to build better connections. That's just a good human being. Matt Ritter, welcome to World's Greatest Dad.
I love it. I mean, I have to tell you guys, I've been dying to tell you this. This coincided with such a funny dad fail. My wife went out of town on her first kind of like leaving the baby wine adventure. I have a 2-month-old and a 2-year-old. And so I'm alone. Whoa. So I'm alone for the morning. And I start packing my bag. She goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm just going to take him to breakfast." She goes, "Do not go. Do not go." And I just took it as a challenge. You know, this was like, how dare you? How dare you? There are no limits on my abilities as a dad. So and so we bought this, like the double stroller stuff, but like, it's so stupid. It didn't come with, like, it doesn't come with the attachment. You buy the second piece for the double stroller. It doesn't come with the piece that attaches them. So can't do the double stroller. So I put the 2-month-old in the Bjorn, the 2-year-old in the stroller, go to Le Pen Quotidien, sit my 2-year-old down, order him some pancakes. Everybody's looking at me. They're like, there's a table across from me. They go, "Are you alone? Are you alone?" And then this other couple's like, He's that guy. He's a good dad. I've seen him before. I've seen him with his other kid. He's a good dad. That's a good dad. And then this other woman comes up. She goes, "My husband would never." I mean, it's a scene. It's a scene. And I'm soaking in the glory of it because this is, I just sat down. Yeah. Everybody's calm. Everything's calm. I'm like, look, you know, you just do what you do. I'm just a dad. I'm not, you know, I'm not special. I'm just a guy doing my best. They're like, "Bless you. You're a hero. You're a saint." Cut to 5 minutes later, my 2-year-old is just having a freak out, throwing food, throwing his fork. He's into like this throwing knife phase right now. And my 2-month-old, who's usually calm, is now, I realized I took him out and he's got a fever and he's crying and I can't stop him from crying. And I'm, you know, I chose not to put my 2-year-old in a high chair. So now he's free ranging it around and I'm chasing him. And the baby's crying, and the woman at the store, at the Le Pen, she's like, "Are you sure your baby doesn't have colic? Is it a colic?" I'm like, "No, he's just sick, actually." And I brought him out. I'm like, "We got to get out of here." I'm trying to pay the bill. I have to go pee. I go to the bathroom with the baby and the Bjorn. And she's like, "Did you just change the baby?" I'm like, "No, I got to pee. I left my 2-year-old outside in the restaurant alone." And then I get outside. I lived like a 15-minute walk. I'm walking home. They're both crying. Some guy, people are like looking at me. Some guy stops me who lives like 3 blocks from my house. He's like, you want a bottle of wine?" I had told him on the way over that my wife was on a wine tour. He's like, "Let's come here." He's like, "Let's take a picture for your wife." So we video recorded my two babies melting down with me holding 2 bottles of wine and just having a great laugh. That was my day. That was my day.
When did this happen?
Sunday. This was Sunday.
Oh my God! 48 hours ago.
Yeah.
When is your wife back?
Well, so here's the funny part. My wife comes back tomorrow. She's gone for 2 days. I already had my mom flying in. It was just a 4-hour gap, but I tried to press my luck.
Oh, wow.
Where's your mom?
So my mom's in New York. I live in L.A. So she's right. You know.
And you're in a fairly walkable part of L.A., weirdly,
yeah,
right?
I live in Larchmont Village. It's amazing. It's so family friendly and everybody knows everybody. So everybody was like taking pity on me. It was just like it was just kind of a funny moment for the whole town.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad everyone was able to kind of rally around you.
But it's hilarious. Like seeing a dad, it was like, you know, when you see a wounded animal, like a wounded hawk, you know, the neighborhood, you know, everybody's, is that a wounded hawk? Like, should we do anything? Yeah. No, it's still a wild animal. Let it, you know, just don't get too close.
You're almost at the end. It sounds like we've got, do you have like a giant clock with how many hours remain until you're no longer solo?
Yeah, it's 7 hours.
Okay.
So the countdown clock is at 7 hours.
I mean,
well, thanks for wasting some of that time there. With us, you know?
Yeah, I needed to kill the time. I told my mom, I'm like, "I got a pod, you got the 2 kids. It's all you." No, but my mom, we have a nanny too, so it's fun.
I got the pod.
Village, man. Someone said that once.
And then he's in a village. He's in Larchmont. As someone who's lived in L.A. for 20 years, and granted, I've been away for 10, it's good that you're in Larchmont, because that, even though it's like literally three blocks, there is enough eyeballs to kind of go, oh, let's kind of take care. I mean, I feel like you'd be really in the sticks if this happened in Koreatown. You know, like, yes, that may not have worked out.
That's absolutely right. This is the only neighborhood that's going to rally around, and like, everybody kind of watches everybody's kids. It's kind of funny. Like, everybody knows my son Brenner in the neighborhood. So like, I can be at the coffee shop. He can walk to the bagel place next door, you know, just like grab a bagel on his own.
Noah's? Is it still Noah's Bagel?
No, we go to Sam's. We go to Sam's. No offense, Noah.
It's changed. Things have
changed. Another Jew who moved out west to make bagels, Holly.
Noah's Bagels was like iconic for a long time. It was.
I can say that, Matt. I'm a member of the tribe, despite
Noah's isn't even really a bagel, and there still aren't, whoever the Jews are that are moving out west for the bagels, they're not the right Jews. We need the
Yeasty Boys. Is that a thing? What's the story?
They're pretty good. I don't know. Do they have a store, or is it just like a guy in a truck? It's a truck.
I think it's the truck, right?
Yeah. We don't have the truck in our neighborhood.
So we've got the 2-year-old and the 2-month-old, which, to be honest, is why you're here. You know, friendship expert is great. It's important. We're going to talk about it. Yeah. But if you didn't have those kids, I mean, you're kind of useless to us on World's Greatest Dad, I'll be honest.
That's right. I'm very glad to be brought into the dad universe, the dad pod universe.
Welcome. Yeah. For context, Ollie has a 13-year-old. Son named Heath, who enjoys anime and running. What else does he like? I don't know.
Gaming.
Is he running with the weighted vest? Everybody's running with the weighted vest now. That's the big trend.
Yeah, no, he's kind of the opposite like that. I mean, he's
naked,
a very...
He runs naked. He's like, I need less weight on me.
He doesn't have a lot of weight on him. This is not from this side of the equation.
Oh yeah, he's got a natural lean genetics.
Oh yeah, no, that's that comes from like the great grandfather who ran at Cornell, not the Bangladeshi side where we just survived famine, but. He's doing that, and you know, lately he's just he really came full circle, because there was a couple years ago, if I played music that had an expletive, he would have lost his mind, and now he's in a place where he's very comfortable around explicit lyrics, and now I'm at the stage where I'm like, did he just drop an F-bomb? And I'm kind of okay with it, because he's not saying it to me, you know? So that's kind of the stage of life I'm in. But I will tell you, and why I love doing this podcast, is hearing your story. And granted, I only have one. So imagine my story essentially times two. But I remember taking my son to meet my parents, and my wife could not join, so I had to be on the plane to St. Louis, where my parents lived, where I grew up. And I remember having a 1-year-old. This was when, you know, we wouldn't buy the second plane seat until we had to, right? So he's just on the lap, and he's one. And I remember I just was like constantly bouncing him on my lap to try and keep him from completely melting down. And the looks I got at the airport from dudes, you know, like men who are just like, this guy is not qualified. And I'm like, this is just some dude who's probably like put down 3 Bud Lights at 11 a.m., you know, at the airport bar. And I'm feeling the judgment lasers come out. So thank you for bringing that memory back. That was
We've all been there.
And then I, it'd be weird if I was like, but I don't have kids, man. I have a 7-year-old daughter named Cece. She's cool. And almost 5-year-old son named Zeke. And it's fun. You know, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, Ollie, with the cursing thing, because, you know, our daughter, our 7-year-old, she too, you know, she knows it's wrong when we curse, which oftentimes my wife now, Matt, we just got a Nintendo Switch, so we play Family Mario Kart, and sometimes the F-bombs fly, you know, when things don't go your way, when a banana hits.
You drop F-bombs when you play Mario Kart?
No,
you're
my
competitive.
No, I'm not competitive at all. I'm just happy to be there. My wife always is first in first place. If if she has any kind of hurdle comes her way, she's getting, you know, the expletives are flying, and we owe my daughter so much money that will never be paid. But, you know, she's like, $5, $5.
We're like, sure. Stakes. Wow.
I mean, you know, we try to keep ourselves honest, but then we never pay out. And then, so Cece really hates cursing to the point where, like, she'll come home really upset from school because she'll say, Daddy, it says fucking bitch in the bathroom. And we're like,
it does.
Did you tell someone? She's like, I told Miss Chocolate, but it's still there. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. She'll just like give us the update. Still says fucking bitch. But then our son Zeke, almost five, a little rambunctious, always kind of needling. He'll be like, Otis said fucking. And we're like, you just said fucking.
Oh, he's playing that game. I like it.
Oh, Otis said fuck you. We're like, no, you said it. You're repeating it.
You got to talk to school about the janitorial services.
Yeah.
It's just up in the stall. Like, it's like a 1980s Lean on Me, you know, or the principal, Jim Belushi. Remember that one?
Oh, all too well. All too well.
I never saw that one. There was a series of like four movies that were like, you know, tough principal.
Yeah. Clean Up the School, Lean on Me, The Principal. Stand and Deliver is actually based on a dynamic true story. And then The Principal was ridiculous because he just shows up to Detroit and, you know, just kind of like.
Is that the calculus? Is that like they're all doing calculus?
Is that the calculus?
That's Stand and Deliver.
Yeah.
Edward James
Olmos.
And they
think they cheated because how could these inner city kids be so good at calculus?
Yeah.
I miss those movies. I want a movie where there's graffiti in the high school bathrooms. Principal's got to come. Some kid challenges him to a knife fight.
Yeah. It's the old switchblade, you know.
Switchblades.
Yeah. No,
that's my son just started throwing knives. I was just thinking about knives.
Yeah, you mentioned that. So does he have kind of aspirations to join the circus, or what's the story there?
No, he's just in that phase, you know. I don't know. I hope it's a short phase where he's just throwing things he shouldn't be throwing. Like, he just, you know, it's like we're on the world's greatest dad pod, and I just said my son threw a knife.
He's two. It's he's just exploring. He's just like, he's testing the waters, you know what I mean?
Took a red stripe. This is a really funny thing my son does. I barely drink. Like, my wife hardly, between us, we'll have a party once a summer and people will bring over beers. A year later, everything's still in the
fridge. Same beer. Yeah.
You know, like, never drink. But I have a liquor cabinet. It's like a nice one because I never drink. It's like always full.
Mm-hmm.
Every time somebody comes over, my son pulls this little prank, like, dad's an alcoholic. He goes to the bar and he goes, Daddy's juice. And he brings over like a bottle of Hennessy gin. I swear, I don't drink that much. Like, just imagine child services coming in to check the scene. And he's like, Daddy's juice. So it's like, I swear I don't drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids, they know.
I've had this
might be used as... you know, in the testimony for
evidence. Yeah, I'll put a camera on you can watch my liquor cabinet for a year.
Yeah.
So you've got a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old, and you are in your 40s?
45.
Right there, smack dab.
We call that mid to late early 40s?
Yeah. And I just turned 40. Hey, we're just three guys in our 40s.
Yeah.
So you've had quite a run of life experiences, career, relationships, friendships, and now here you are with these young kids and you're the friendship guy, the friendship expert. How has that affected your friendships from the past, new ones? I mean, I imagine you've been welcomed into kind of, you know, the world of making dad friends, for better or worse. I mean, like, how have you kind of merged these worlds?
Yeah, well, in terms of the dad world, you know, I don't think you get welcomed into dad friendships, actually. I think that's one of the biggest problems. There is no such thing as welcome. There's no daddy and me groups. There's like the bus, there's the school drop-off, there's the park. I mean, there are places, but there is no welcoming committee for dads. And so I've been very conscious about creating that because of all my friendship expertise of what do I want my social life to look like post baby, now post second baby. And, you know, I've been very intentional about making dad friends. I think one mistake that a lot of dads make is, you know, what Ollie said, which is like, oh, I just have my son and that's fine. For most people, that's not really fine. And it's also a burden on their wives to put everything on them. So I think it's just healthy to have that. And sometimes you're in a different phase of life from the rest of your friends. Like my friends are either have much older kids or don't have kids. So I was like, you know what? That doesn't mean they're gone. That doesn't mean I'm ditching them, but I do need people that are sharing my experiences now. And I think that's a big omission that a lot of people make, especially men. It's like, oh, why aren't my friendships working? Because you're not in the same season right now of your life. And that doesn't mean that you don't have great feelings towards that person. You don't love that person and you can't be there for each other, but not in the day-to-day way of what your life is when you're a new dad. So I've been intentional about making new dad friends. I met one of them just walking in Larchmont, and we now share an office that I'm in currently. We started a dad's crew called the Dilfs of Larchmont, which my wife and his wife and everybody else's wife make fun of because it's self-proclaimed only. Nobody else has called us that. That's fine. It'll catch on eventually. And we have hats and everything. So I've created a dad's basketball league at my son's school. Our house is, my wife and I have always been hosts by nature. And so our house is kind of a little bit of the center of town. And we have a communal kind of like parenting, you know, bring your 2-year-old over and throw them in our, you know, we have a ball, somebody got us a ball pit, which is like, is that a nice gift or like a prank? I think that's sort of how I've done it is, you know, I've tried to just craft the life that I want with, while acknowledging the realities of like, I don't have unlimited time. So there's a lot more low key hangs. You want to, like, we have a lot of parents in the neighborhood. It's like, hey, I'm walking. We're walking. It's the 6 p.m., 7 p.m. post dinner walk. I'm walking by your house. Can I pop in? The things that charge me up and, you know, keep me feeling healthy in my social fitness. That's sort of the short answer or long answer.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like everybody needs a Matt Ritter. Not everybody is the Matt Ritter. You know, I think like the ability to just be like, come over. I mean, everybody knows kind of who that house is growing up. And then as a teenager and then like in college or 20s, it's like, you know, whose place you're going over. And we have those, we are not the hosts, you know, like we're in an apartment in Brooklyn, but we have friends who have outdoor space or, you know, just like bigger spot or they're just like, come over. And it's the best to know that you have that kind of anchor. And I will say, it's funny that you mentioned like, you're like really branching out and making like being intentional about it, because there have been so many times over the last 7 years of having a kid where, you know, I'll be invited out to something and I'll be like, I don't know if I really want to go. And my wife's like, please go, because, you know, I work really hard at keeping, you know, our friendships alive. And, you know, like sometimes on the weekend, I'll be like, oh, what are we doing? And she's like, you know, she's like, I've been working on plans for 3 days, you know, texting all the moms. We're all getting, because for me, I'm just like, we show up, throw a blanket down. We, you know, we're having a picnic, throwing balls around. It's great. And it's like, that didn't just happen. And I think a lot of men, you know, it's like that invisible work. It's not just housework or, you know, child rearing. It's also like texting and talking to people and making plans and stuff. So how do we do that?
So you brought up a bunch of interesting points. So yes, wives are, well, two things you said. One is, let's just back up to the host thing. So I am that person. You're not that person. Everybody should seek out that person if they're not going to be that person. So like, you should, you know, when you were a kid, hey, and you didn't have a pool, it's really nice to make friends with the kid with the pool. Because if you have somebody like that, your life's just going to be so much better. But I do think on some level, everybody can be the friend. And we talk about that on the pod, which is, you know, you invite people to things. You can always invite people to things. Sometimes I'll just buy 2 tickets to a game or a concert or a movie. And then I just have them. And now it's kind of forcing my hand. to go out and invite people to stuff, and people like being invited to stuff. So I think that's it. But if you are the host, then you never are worried about your social health. Because if you're, you know, if you have established that, then people are always kind of just like checking in on you all the time or dropping in on you, inviting you to stuff. Now, with regards to how do men make plans? So, you know, there's a couple things. Yes, like your wife's always going to be the plan maker. Like, I'm not going to be delusional about it and say, oh, no, you're just going to take over the calendar, right? But two things you said. One is wives want you to get off the couch, right? Like, they are very much like invested in that and they need that. So, yes, I agree. And I also think like bringing your wife, not to put more responsibility on her, but bring her into that conversation of like, hey, I'm trying to do this. She will also push you more then, which I think is good. You know, she'll be like, you said you wanted to meet up with this friend. So now the opportunity is here. Go do it. But the other thing is just, we are intentional about all the other stuff in our calendar. Let's stop acting like friendship is not meant to be like something calendared, right? And like part of a routine. So like, I'm a very big proponent of stop saying we should get together, we should hang out. Just say we are and do it. The best time to make plans is right after you've hung out with somebody. Mm-hmm. Before you leave, you do that awkward thing that we all do where it's like, that was great. And you actually do feel great about it. You're not BSing. You're like, we should do this again sometime, man. Great to see you. And then what? You didn't do it. It never happens. 6 months or a year goes by and you're like, that was great. So right then and there, when you end the encounter, that should be baked in now. This is, I want all your listeners to go with, here's a new paradigm. We bake in our next hang right there, the same way you do with a professional meeting that you're like, okay, we finished this. When's our next meeting on the books? Mm-hmm. So I think we just are like these busy professional adults who act like flakes when it comes to friendship, even though we're not that way in every other aspect of our life. So I'm really, especially with my newsletter, that's what I'm really trying to hammer home with people, is that friendship isn't a personality trait. It's not reserved for extroverts. It's just something you have to commit to. And once you commit to it, it's pretty easy to go, okay, what's on my to-do list? Oh, there's this one friendship thing on my to-do list every day. I was supposed to text Jim. Why am I not doing that? Because right now we're just treating it like some luxury.
Dang. This is a high-functioning adult. I was going to say, I think I'm a flake in my professional life. You're so 100% right. And you know, it's funny. Sometimes some of it just seems like I will be the guy who's like, man, I shoulda. I'm literally looking back at the last 10 years. I'm thinking about when my kids were like 3, 4, and where did some of that time go? I remember when we had Heath, we had other friends who were also pregnant as well. We were living in LA, and one of the tricky parts is when you have people who are like in Santa Monica and we're in downtown, you're like, well, that sucks. Yeah, and it was funny when we moved to Austin, I was like, this is so much, in some ways it was a lot easier, but we didn't have like 20 years of friendships to kind of lean on too. And then there becomes this whole, like, I don't know, there's a lot to unpack when you also move to a whole new city, you know.
It's the biggest question we get on the pod. That's probably the biggest issue. I would say like of all the friendship issues, the number one root of it is new city.
Yeah, I mean, and you just kind of roll with it and whatever. But, you know, as an example, and this is something that it worked out, but I still have the mentality to try and figure out. Neil, the last time we recorded, remember, I was like, oh, I was out with some high school friends. I had a friend of mine who texted me. She's like, I'm in town. She only texted me. I haven't seen her since like 2001. Okay, whatever. I'm like, I can't believe you have my phone number. We ended up putting together a hang, and I was kind of like reluctant, like, I don't know, you know, like, this is, you know, I'm freaking 48. Do I really need to be doing this anymore? Blah, blah, blah. ended up going out, and then it was worth it just for the text thread alone to recap the whole night before. And I remember what I said to my wife before I went. I was like, I had to, like, go to a hotel bar. I hate going to hotel bars. I hate going to, like, you know, there's so many cooler places to go. Went to places I didn't really care about. But then, you know, I remember saying to myself, life is short. And, like, yeah, you know, this is, especially as I'm starting to get into the drop dead years with 50 soon around the corner. It's like, my God, I need to get out of the mentality of going, oh, this is a pain, or I don't need to do this. When you do, you know, like, you know, like, I've failed in some ways as an adult maintaining friendships and stuff like that. And it burns you after a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you
know, I don't want to like be too harsh on it, but if your social life sucks, there's a part of your life that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just like the blunt truth of it. But I have the same feelings that you just described, and I just had it. Even my friendship expertise, it doesn't change being 45. I just had a 20th law school reunion, and I had the same convo with my wife. Like, I don't want to go. I don't know. Like, what am I going to talk to these people? I haven't seen them in forever. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm going to sit at a hotel bar. Literally the same convo. So just so you know, we all have the same inner monologue and, like, struggle, because I think that's universal. But then you do it, and we all have the same reaction of like, oh, that was awesome. What was I all in my head about? I it was so nice. It was just nice, and you laugh so much the longer you go.
Yeah.
You get back into that. But it also doesn't have to mean anything. And by that I mean now you don't have to be friends with that person again. You don't have to now go, okay, well, I have to undo this 20-year. Not everything has to be, okay, we're trying to create my new BFF. Your social fitness involves, yes, your BFFs, but also these casual hangs, also these catch-ups. They're all kind of part of your contentment. That's how I see it now. And that's like kind of this new shift I've had since doing the pod, is we're all like, okay, well, I don't have friends, or, you know, I've got my circle and that's it, so I'm good or I'm not good. But I actually think you have to just look holistically of like, what is this contentment filled with? It's filled with like a little bit of these different buckets.
Neil? Well, you know, what do you do though, you know, when there are, I think you guys have talked about this, Matt, like the uneven friendship, right? Like, one person's making more effort and, you know, the other person is flaking, you know, and I feel like oftentimes this happens with friends who you have known for a really long time. Probably, you know, expectations are more calibrated for people you just met or, you know, the last few years. But like, those people you either grew up with or went to high school with, college, and you either live in different cities or you're just doing different things. And you're like, I always invite him. He never comes. When he does, you know, it's like you're trying to recapture something you used to have, but you don't want to cut them out. I mean, I find, like, often all or nothing thinking, where it's like, well, if we're not going to have the relationship that we had, then what's it, you know, what are we doing? We're just casual acquaintances. Is it worth keeping those people around? How do you cope with that? Because in some ways it is kind of a loss.
Very complicated. I'd say that's our number two biggest question that we get on the pod. So my take is that no friendship is 50-50. And so that whole magical thinking of a 50-50 friendship, almost no relationships are like purely 50-50. There is a balance, right? And we all kind of know it when it shifts into like, I'm just doing all the lift, right? When you get that feeling, because we all serve a different purpose in a friend group. We're all different personalities. And some people are just I'm not the person that does the plan making, and it's annoying. But then if you like hanging out with them and you feel energized, you kind of let it go. And the longer you've known somebody, it's kind of established tenure, and you forgive a lot more, right? I think those are fine, and you just have to accept certain friendship dynamics. So I'll say that for most friendships. You can't reset a 20-year like friendship. Like, no, now we're going to do it this way. It's very hard. It's very hard to do. Let's just be real about that. But if a friendship's no longer serving us, we tend to just make so many excuses to keep the status quo. right? Because we're like, oh, well, what am I going to do? Just cut them off and then I don't have that friend. Well, when you cut out negative energy, I find you usually now have room to replace with positive energy. And I've had a few of those in my life, long-term friends, where it just was getting sour and I was feeling angry, but like not really warranted because this person has just been who they've been the entire time. They haven't like changed the way they've interacted. You just have either grown some different values or more respect for yourself or your time or your energy, and you've changed. So it's okay. You don't have to end it. You don't have to have a blow up fight. You can just kind of casually decide, I'm going to spend less time with this person. That's my best advice. You just be like, you know what? If it's like that much of a burden, you don't need to have a huge fight. You don't need to really call it out if it's been that way, because you're really not going to change the dynamic. Sometimes you can just put the plan making on that person as a bit of like a test run. You know, it's like, hey, can you make the plan? Just to see if like they have a minimal amount of care about this thing. Or you could just stop texting and see what happens. Like, see if they have a minimal amount of, I'm going to reach out to this person. Because like, at some point, if they have none of that, what is it? Is it a friendship? Or is it just like some, you know, solo thing that you're doing where you think there's another person around? You know, it's like, you have a Canadian girlfriend. You know, remember when you're teenager and you're telling people you lost your virginity to that Canadian girlfriend? Well, where is she, man?
We met summer. We just lost touch. She's in Quebec. Yeah. She's in Quebec. That's the thing. Yeah. Oh my God. Same jokes. See, this is what happens when we have someone closer to my era, Neil. You know, Neil and I, we have to go through this whole, like, you know, when were you born again? In the 90s? It's insane. Oh no, late 80s. Late 85.
Come on. My wife is 86, so you are peers and contemporary.
Elder millennial.
Yeah. Different, slightly different movie and music references. And
yeah. You guys have a little bit more of the like mid to late 80s.
We're Nintendo. You're Super Nintendo.
That's right.
I had regular Nintendo. We have more crossover than you think. You know, I think that the technology started to move faster a few years.
Yeah, it didn't get good till the late 90s.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
GameCube.
What do you do, you know, when I imagine you have friends who, you know, you are in the same season of life, and perhaps this hasn't happened yet because your kids are so little, but, you know, I have found, at least with a 7-year-old, there are some people where you're like, oh, we're having a good time, and our kids are the same age, and then time goes on, and you're like, we have nothing in common. And now our kids don't even really care about each other, but we're still kind of in this same circle. I mean, what, you know, and you don't necessarily have that shared tightness. How do you kind of extricate yourself? Or can they just be a casual hang, you know, like a run into? What's your advice there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you're talking about basically like downshifting a little bit, right? I mean, I think you do it slowly and casually, non-obviously, right? You try not to make a thing out of it, but you're entitled, again, like everybody, I think everybody's so worried about this stuff, but like you're entitled to craft the friend circle that you want, right? And I'm going through this a little bit. I'll be honest with you. I'm going through this right now because we've made kind of, your instinct is to be friends with every other parent in your kid's school or every other person in the neighborhood. And I think your discernment is lower when your kids are really young and you're just like, I just want other people around. And then you haven't really figured out whose values meet yours and who you actually just enjoy hanging out with, you know, because then otherwise you just end up with maybe your wife's friend's husband or something, or, you know, whatever it is. Again, I think it goes back to, you're allowed to be, and you should force yourself to be intentional about it. And some things require communication and conversations. But again, I'm like a realist. I don't think you need to have a convo and be like, I don't think we're aligned anymore. You know, like that just doesn't happen with other parents. You know, you're allowed, but, and especially I think it's easier if your kids aren't friends anymore, then like that was the kind of glue, you know, forcing you guys together. I think there are these natural kind of moments in life where you're kind of, the door opens for you to walk out of it. You know, it's like, it's kind of like, okay, the bill's been paid. You can go now if you want, right? Otherwise it gets weird. You're hanging around. So I think you have a moment to just be like, all right, I think you just have to be like, not kind of wishy-washy about it, right? If you're just like, this is how I'm feeling, just make the call and just be like, all right, I'm not hanging out with these people that much anymore. If I see them at things, always be cordial and friendly, you know, like there's no reason to make it a thing.
Sure.
You know, I swear, this would have been so interesting, and I can still give you this perspective now, but I remember when my son was in daycare, and he's like not even a year old, and we had to attend a meeting for the daycare. And, you know, I think we all would share this, certainly when I lived in LA. We were so fortunate to find a daycare in our neighborhood, right? And so the one we ended up at was it was really interesting. It was essentially for the metro workers of the city of LA. It was in downtown, but this wasn't just bus drivers. This was like executives all the way up the field, and they had this meeting because they didn't like the service, the daycare providers, and you know, it was a bunch of parents who got their pitchforks out. They were up in arms. They're like, we don't like these people. We're gonna get some new people in there. And here I am, new dad, thrust into a meeting, looking around at all these, frankly, suits. Like at the time I was working a commercial production casting, you know, and I'm looking around going, who the hell are these people? This guy wears slacks. Like, I haven't seen anyone wear slacks since my dad, right? And I would describe it to people, you know, being a parent means now you have to deal with adults that you have nothing in common. Now, I bring all this up to say that as my son's gotten older and we've made, to be blunt, huge life changes. We moved to Austin, Texas, mostly because my wife got a job at a private school that my son could go to. And now, you know, we're in a new group. It's new people. You know what I mean? And, you know, it has been a bit of a struggle being around essentially adults that just walked a different life than I have. How would you, you know, being somebody who goes, it's being a parent means you got to deal with a bunch of ding-dongs and people you have nothing in common with. That being said, Matt Ritter, what's your advice in you know, perhaps even creating reasonable friendships with people that wear slacks?
Listen, I worked as a lawyer for 5 years. I wore suits. Now, I'm not even wearing pants right now.
Shocking, but not surprising.
Look, I have this sort of saying that we all collapse towards the mean as we get older, which is like the people you thought were super cool and then you get to be a parent, they're not that cool. People you thought were really jerky and maybe they were in their 20s, 30s, they're not that jerky. We're all a lot more similar than you think. And you don't know people's interests. So I find that at our age, a lot of easy, low-hanging friendships can be built off of interest. They don't have to be your BFF, but you can really build a good casual friendship off interest. The only way to do that is to know what their interests are. And the way to be a better conversationalist is to say, instead of how you doing, of like, read anything good lately? Like, you know, what do you got anything fun going on this weekend? Just to get them excited about things. I find that people are always more friendly when they're like talking about something they're into. And once you go from there, like once you've popped that open of like, oh, maybe we both like reading or something, then you just like have something to talk about. And that is like the base layer for adult friendship. Once you've already gotten past that, oh, we both have kids. And now what? Okay, so we both have kids. That's not enough for us to sustain this thing.
Okay. So just give people a chance. That's Matt Ritter's like, you got to give people a chance.
I think, you know, parents were just like, all right, what am I going to do? Like, make friends with this random other parent? Maybe, maybe not. But like, you don't even know what they're about or like what one thing that could unite you guys. They could just be a pickleball player and you're a pickleball player. And now you have somebody to do something with. Again, I'm not trying to put everybody in the BFF bucket because I don't think that's realistic. So I think it's right. Like, what are our goals with being more content, which I think is the ultimate goal. So the thing that's missing is our daily thought process about what friendship should be and what social fitness should be. It's not, I have to turn this stranger into my BFF. It's, I have to look at this group and go, okay, are there some people here that I could level up into somebody I go to concerts with because they like the same 90s, you know, bands? Like, I needed somebody to go to Pearl Jam with because my wife was born in 86 and some of my best friends out here just aren't into it. And that was through a friend of a friend. Now we're like pretty close, but that's one of the things we do together every year. It's like a once a year thing. That doesn't mean we're, you know, definitely going to be a BFFs because we do that, but it's, you know, something in my overall friendship universe. It's like, oh, I have a concert friend.
What's your favorite Pearl Jam song? That's a hard one. I know. You can do a top five.
Best Pearl Jam songs ever. Let me see. My favorites are Better Man, Elderly Woman Behind the Counter.
Good one, yes.
In a Small Town.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite. I'd say Better Man and that, and Live. How about you? I'd say those are my top three.
Those are in there for me. I sang that at like our eighth grade graduation, Elderly Woman, but and I think all the parents were like, what the
fuck? Wow.
Because also, like, I do think I am a little too young for Pearl Jam, but I had like one friend, you know, who I and it's funny too, Matt, you know, and I haven't actually thought about, because we mostly talk about dad stuff, but we're leaning more friend this episode, and I'm happy we are, because it's bringing me back to a lot of friendships in middle school and high school, people that were like formative, that I have since kind of lost touch with, but I still think about them a lot, and they really made me who I am. Joe Ossi turned me on to Pearl Jam, you know, like, and lots of other music, you know, and I wouldn't, it wouldn't be a part of, like, my cultural knowledge or love without having spent all those years with him, and it wasn't for naught, even though we don't talk anymore, you know, and so, like, not that everything needs to have meaning or be tied up in a bow, but, I do think, you know, it's like, what is that? I don't know if you guys ever talk about it. It's like some people are just for a season, some are for a reason, yeah. Some are whatever that Instagram quote
I think
is.
You hit on something big there, which is that I think part of friendship, so underrated, criminally underrated, is about turning people on to things. I say this in my newsletter. One of my big tips is like, put somebody you like onto something you like. You know, like that's, it could really change them in ways that are no big deal for you, but like really affect you. You read the right book, you get into the right music, you find the right casual sport for you, whatever it is. So yeah, that's cool that you're like thinking about that person, you know, it's like they turned you onto this thing that stuck with you forever.
We got a few more questions. We got you for a few more minutes.
Yeah.
All right, we got a few more questions, and then we're going to bring you into the dad lightning round. But I am. So I'm curious. Obviously, you guys, you and Aaron, have been talking about friendship for a long time. You have kind of this massive friend group that, you know, is maybe to be envied, to be modeled. What you mentioned a little bit, like friends kind of falling off and downsizing. Like, how do you handle as an adult? Being ghosted, you know, or just being on the other side of that, where you're like, no, this really is important to me, and it's just not to that other person, you know, because I think we've really been talking about it from like the me vantage point, but
yeah,
I think a lot of people have been on that receiving end of just like, I won't be friends with you anymore, and that, you know, and I think that can hurt like men and encourage the loneliness epidemic, you know.
It does hurt. Look, it's a loss. It hurts. You can. And it's okay to mourn it. I think that's like something we need to give permission to. It's okay to mourn the loss of a friend. Other piece that I don't think people are doing, so that's one piece I don't think people are doing, is you should be grateful for what it was. Okay? It's okay to be like, you know what? We're not friends anymore. I just think, again, a lot of this stuff is mental reframe. I'm hurt. I'm wounded. That could last for a while. But then once you're kind of like get through that, I think you should go, you know what? I appreciate it for what it was. I appreciate that person for who they were for me at that time in my life when I needed them. But now this is the world telling me it's time to move on. And, you know, as I said, like, once you mentally move on, you can make space for other people in your life or fill it. There's a lot of other ways to fill it. I don't, you know, it's, I'm not going to lie and say like there's a fix for it, because there isn't.
Yeah, that's fair. It's an honest, it's like one of those things you'd say to your kids. It's just like, hey, this is, you know, not a, there's no clean answer here. It's
yeah, I'm never trying to fix any of this stuff with friendship. Like, honestly, when I say I'm a friendship expert, I think it's more like, again, it's a lot about reframes and hard truths. That's what it is to be, you know, grown up and deal with friendship.
Yeah. Have you had any listeners, you know, kind of call in with updates about how maybe you've like saved a friendship or how things ended up? And
yeah, we get a lot. And this was one of our sort of big quotes on the podcast is, your friends aren't mind readers. We get a lot of people talking about all these things that they think their friends are thinking, and they have all these, you know, just thinking the worst about something they did. They don't know what it's like. And we're always just like, just communicate, tell them, you know, like have a convo about it. And some of the time it's like they don't have no idea that you were even thinking that. And it's just like, you just stop talking to this person over nothing. You know, like we get a lot of that where it's like, oh, you were right. They weren't even mad at me. Like we get a lot of that. Like, or the flip side is, they were mad at me. I didn't know why. Now I understand it. Now I can work through it. So men, we just don't communicate in a healthy way, just as our baseline. You know, our baseline is not communicating the things that we're feeling to our friends. And I don't expect every guy to be super vulnerable all of a sudden, but I do think, you know, we can be more transparent. You know, it's like, yeah, dude, I'm pissed. You did this thing. Like, so find out what that thing is. We had a funny one, even me and Aaron on the pod, like he went away with his family and I decided I wasn't going to text him the entire time. And I didn't tell him that. And he got home. He's like, dude, what did I do wrong? Like, we're like, I don't even know. I'm struggling to figure out, like, you're so, what are you pissed about? I'm like, no, I wanted you to have uninterrupted family quality time. He's like, oh my God. You know, it's like, I never communicated. So we had this whole funny. So now we joke about that. It's like, you know, and your friends aren't mind readers. So yeah, we've had a lot of that. We've had a lot of the people move to a new city, really try our approach step by step of like, okay, I started going to a third place. I started doing something regularly and consistently. I started getting people's digits. We're normalizing men getting the digits. And I normalized like making the first move, like getting things on the calendar. And yeah, we've had people starting to build, but I have no delusions that we're going to find some listener who starts at zero and then a year later is like, you know, has this huge thriving social circle, because things take time.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's really no substitute for time. I mean, it's like, because it's funny, you were saying earlier, you know, about the forgiving things in relation to how long you've known someone. And I think about like some of my friends from growing up, and you know, the weird thing is, if we met today, I would not want to be friends with them. Right. But and yet that is the paradox of like, because we met at 14, it is what it is, and yep. I love them, you know. And it's yeah,
they're grandfathered in despite their many flaws.
Yes.
Neil is all about the whole, oh yeah, that was a friendship for then time. But all right, so I have to ask you this, Matt Ritter. I assume your kids have not been keeping up with your podcast, or they're not getting your newsletter.
I make them wear merch, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do have to dress them. So that's non-negotiable. But, you know, as they do get older, and this could be, honestly, I'd love to like revisit this on another podcast episode. But what do you want to teach your kids about, you know, developing, maintaining, growing friendships?
I want to teach them to be generous, selfless. The rewards are so huge that you don't even realize. But it's also like, in a weird way, like selfish, because people are like, you'll be shocked at how many doors will open and how many people will look at you a certain way if you just don't expect anything in return for the way that you treat people and just give your time and energy and positivity to people.
Can't be awesome. That.
No way.
Oh, tell us about your book. Tell us about the book really quick.
No, we met. It's actually a great story. We met a guy in Sundance who worked at Audible. We're having lunch, and my podcast partner had to go to the bathroom, and he was in there for like an hour with the trots, as will happen when you're drinking for like 48 hours straight in Sundance. And this guy's like, I listen to your pod. And we're like, awesome. Thanks, man. He's like, what are you doing with it? I'm like, I don't know. What do you mean? Well, you should do something with Audible. I worked there. I'm like, great. So we became friends, and he had a kid subsequently to that, 2 months older than Brenner. So we bonded over that. And, you know, we pitched him this idea that we should institutionalize everything that we've come up with on the pod. So it's called the Buddy System, how to make and maintain friendships. And so the first half of the book is like, I have no friends. What am I going to do? And the second half is like, I've had all these friends and they've kind of fallen off, and I need to do friendship maintenance, and I need to fix things, and I need to repair things. So it's this real clear, digestible roadmap to building a healthy friendship circle.
Very cool. All right. Well, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yes, yes, yes. You know,
Ollie, want to bring us home and bring Matt Ritter into the Dad Lightning Round?
Matt Ritter, are you ready for Dad Lightning Round?
Let's rock.
Okay, here we go. Best dad advice in 5 words or less.
Be a patient dad.
That was 5 words. Iced coffee or Red Bull?
Iced coffee.
There you go. Super strength or X-ray vision?
Super strength.
Okay. Greatest dad of all time.
Oh, this is a hard one. Great. My dad.
Okay, that there you go. That was a smart answer. I keep thinking about Bill Cosby. That didn't age well. I grew up in the 80s. Favorite thing to cook for your kids?
Oh, I was going to say favorite thing to cook is chicken parm. I make an excellent chicken parm. My wife makes a great Caesar. I mean, my kids are 2 and 2 months, so the answer right now is chocolate chip pancakes.
Okay, all right, there you go. Kids song you can't stand.
Oh my God, kids song I can't stand. So I'm weird because I actually love monotony. So I can listen to and sing Baby Shark over and over and over again. Sick.
Baby Shark. It's so great because it reminds me of just the eras we're all in, staggered eras. Best TV dad in history. Oh, this would have been my Bill Cosby. Okay. Best TV dad in history.
Best TV dad in history. Mike Seaver's dad. Was it Mike?
Alan Thicke. Yeah, we'll accept Alan Thicke. Dr. Seaver. Dr. Seaver, if you will. Sure. Yeah. He was in mental health. Why not? Album you can't wait to share with your kids. Ooh, here we go.
Ooh, this is a really good one. Album I can't wait to share with my kids. I will say Creedence Clearwater Greatest Hits.
Oh my God. I was assuming you'd say Versus by Pearl Jam. Peppa Pig or Bluey?
Peppa Pig.
All right. Kids art. Would you frame it or toss it?
Frame it.
Okay. Favorite book to read with your kids?
We are currently reading, I changed the name to Brenner for my son for all of them, and my mom hates it because it makes it sound like he's a bad kid. It's Munch Books. There's one called Thomas's Snowsuit, where he won't put on his snowsuit. And there's another one called Mortimer, where he won't stop. He won't shut the F up, and he's singing all night long. But I call them both Brenner. The book is called Brenner and Brenner's Snowsuit.
Amazing. Biggest lie you heard before kids?
Oh, well, this is the biggest lie that I told. I actually have it recorded. My neighbor sends this to me every couple of months. I said into camera, I'm Matt Ritter. I'm of sound mind, and I'm not going to be one of those dads who ever gets tired. I have a boundless energy, and I just, it just won't be me. I just won't get tired.
Oh man, famous last words. Best part about being a dad.
I think I just have for now. I have I love just like getting physical with my son and wrestling with him. Right now we're in this phase where I'm teaching him like WWE moves, and we'll just spend an hour rolling on the ground, and I'll try and pin him, and on two he kicks me off already, and I throw him, and it's just amazing just hearing him giggle and just jump full speed at me. Nothing better.
I remember showing my son, he was probably maybe 6 at the time, but he was very screen time was still very limited back then, and I would show him YouTube clips of all the wrestling stuff, and all the way up until like say 2015, just whatever was popular. And he would flip his lid. He would be like, I want to watch Sting, I want to watch Sting. And then I remember when I showed him Hulk Hogan, he was like, this is the greatest wrestler of all time. Some things are just an instant read. And it's so reaffirming when you're basically reliving your childhood through your
Oh
kid's
yeah.
eyes. And you're like, yeah, exactly. Transformers was the best
I
toy.
made my son chant "Let's go Knicks" at 15 months.
Oh, yeah.
There
That's
were
a.
worse things he could have said.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Didn't work though,
No.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Maybe. Nick,
Matt
I try.
Ritter, thank you for being the world's greatest dad.
Dude, this was a
Thank you
real
guys. This was
pleasure.
so fun. Loved
Yeah.
it.
Real pleasure.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Yeah.